Thank you so much. The Morning Mix is next.
Welcome to the Morning Mix. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Peter Phillips in studio with Andy Roth. Mickey Hupp is off speaking in Mendocino. Today we interview author Trevor Arison on his new book, The Terror Factory, Inside the FBI's Manufactured War on Terrorism. Additionally, we will hear parts of the speech by Professor Robert Reich, given last Monday in Santa Rosa, entitled, Is Walmart Good for America? An Economics for the 99%. And we'll end the show with an interview with historian Gary Wills regarding his new book, Why Priests? But first, the KPFA News headlines.
I'm Eileen Alfandary with news headlines. President Obama holds a meeting at the White House this morning with the top four congressional leaders in the final hours before $85 billion worth of automatic budget cuts begin to take effect. At the meeting, Obama will spell out his $1.5 trillion deficit reduction plan. Obama is offering to cut spending in domestic programs, in Medicare, and by dropping the inflation formula for Social Security. He also calls for increased tax revenues. Some Democrats are pledging not to vote for cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security as part of a deal. On the Senate floor yesterday, Rhode Island Democrat Sheldon Whitehouse laid out a plan to close out $127 billion worth of tax giveaways and loopholes. One key portion would eliminate certain tax breaks for oil companies.
Over the past decade, the big five oil companies have collectively enjoyed over $1 trillion in profits. Yeah, trillion with a T. Repealing taxpayer giveaways to them is something we should be doing anyway. And it's another $24 billion towards getting rid of the sequester.
Maryland Democrat Barbara Mikulski urged adoption of the so-called Buffett rule, which would mandate a minimum tax rate of 30% for millionaires and billionaires. She said it would raise $71 billion.
It means, this is what Warren Buffett said, that a billionaire should pay the same taxes as somebody, same tax rate as somebody who makes about $55,000 a year. And guess what? We Democrats believe in entrepreneurship. We believe in rewarding hard work. So that tax doesn't kick in till your second million.
Republicans say they will not approve any additional tax increases. More than 200 congressional Democrats are urging the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn a key provision of the federal law against same-sex marriage. The lawmakers are filing a friend of the court brief asking the court to strike down Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act known as DOMA. The provision denies all federal benefits to same-sex couples. The Democratic brief is meant as a counterweight to House Republicans. They've been defending DOMA in court ever since President Obama ordered the Justice Department to stop doing so. The court will hear the DOMA case the day after it hears arguments on the constitutionality of California's Proposition 8 ban on same-sex marriage. President Obama weighed in yesterday asking the court to overturn Prop 8 and citing the 14th Amendment guarantee of equal protection under the law. California state officials also filed legal briefs against Proposition 8, including Assembly Speaker John Perez. His remarks were emailed to reporters.
Proposition 8 eliminated more than just equal rights to marry. Proposition 8 also eliminated the ability of those seeking equal marriage rights to pursue those rights through their elected representatives. That deprived a historically disadvantaged group, a group which I am a member of access to traditional representation in a representative democracy.
Meantime, a new poll indicates California voters would not approve Proposition 8 if it were on the ballot today. The California poll found voters now favor same-sex marriage by a 2-to-1 margin, with 61% approving it. For young voters under the age of 39, that number skyrockets to 78% supporting same-sex marriage. California is already a majority-minority state with no single racial or ethnic group making up a majority of the state's population. As the state's Latino and Asian Pacific Islander populations grow, some advocates are calling for changes in the way the state decides on budget priorities. That's the message of a new report by the Greenlining Institute. Christopher Martinez reports.
Now that communities of color make up a majority of California's population, the nonprofit Greenlining Institute says it's time to look at state budget decisions in a new way.
About two-thirds of the population that use the child care program dollars come from communities of color.
Carla Saporta is health policy director of the Greenlining Institute.
And there was a chart that showed in our budget analysis that 64% of the of Hispanics actually are the ones most likely to use the child care dollars. And what this does is that for many, it means that if a family doesn't have child care services, then they don't have employment because they have to have the child care in order to go to their jobs. And so you're just continuing the cyclical effect of poverty in the state if when we're not actually funding child care.
Democratic Senator Richard Lara is chair of the Legislative Latino Caucus. He says California's changing demographics are changing the political terms of debate.
Just starting to see that we are, even the tone in Sacramento has changed given this new electorate.
Lara says the growing role of Latinos, Asian Pacific Islanders, and African Americans in California's population is forcing a new look at the values expressed in policy decisions.
And so times are changing. We're really living in an interesting time in California. Issues relating to equity, issues relating to multiculturalism and multilingualism are becoming to be a reality now in the state capital.
The Greenlining Institute is not making specific spending recommendations, but it hopes policymakers read its report and consider budget decisions from a perspective that includes racial and ethnic equity. Reporting from the state capitol, I'm Christopher Martinez.
The long-awaited free muni program for San Francisco youth kicks off today. The pilot program will allow San Francisco children and teens up to 17 years of age from low to moderate income families to obtain a free Clipper card. Advocates say some poor families were having a hard time affording even bus fare for their children to attend school. One of those who'll benefit is Alejandro Mendez Ruiz, a freshman at Balboa High School.
Well, I mean, it's 75 cents a day, and it's the transfer's really only good for about 3-4 hours, and school's about 6, and I take bus to school and back, so that's pretty much twice a day. That's $1.50 a day, I mean, for 5 days a week, and sometimes even on the weekends, I take BART, which sometimes even costs more. So this is a huge financial break for me and my family.
The San Francisco Municipal Transit Agency says the 16-month pilot program will cost about $8.7 million, less than 1% of the agency's budget. Weather forecast for the San Francisco Bay Area. Patchy morning fog and clouds, then sunny and warmer, highs in the mid-60s to low 70s. In Fresno and the central San Joaquin Valley, sunny, high 70 to 75 degrees. I'm Eileen Alfandary. I'll have more news at noon. Be sure to join us at 6 for the Pacifica Evening News.
Good morning. I'm Peter Phillips in studio with Andy Roth. Today we'll interview author Trevor Aronson on his new book, The Terror Factory, Inside FBI's Manufactured War on Terrorism. We'll also hear parts of the speech by Professor Robert Reich, given last Monday in Santa Rosa, Is Walmart Good for America? And we will end the show today with an interview with historian Gary Wells regarding his new book, Why Priests? Trevor Aronson is the author of The Terror Factory, Inside the FBI's Manufactured War on Terrorism, which was just recently published. He is co-director of the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting and is a senior fellow at the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis University. He is also acknowledged in the censored 2013 book, His Story on the FBI Involved in Terrorism, was listed number 4 by all the universities that vote on this process. Trevor, are you with us?
Yes, thanks for having me.
Hey, it's great to have you here. Tell us right up front, what's the main idea of your book and about that and why people should read it?
You know, what I look at in the book is the FBI's use of sting operations in the pursuit of would-be terrorists. You know, what the FBI fears more than anything today is not so much a group of trained terrorists like we saw in 9/11, but a so-called lone wolf who's holed up in an apartment somewhere and interested in committing an act of terrorism. And the FBI uses these sting operations to draw these lone wolves out and you know, take them off the street before they can launch any kind of attack. But what I found in my investigation is that the FBI ultimately is targeting people on the fringes of society, people who are economically desperate, in some cases mentally ill, and these men don't have any capacity at all for terrorism. In many cases, they don't have weapons, they don't have money to buy weapons, and in these elaborate and expensive sting operations, The FBI uses informants and undercover agents who provide all of the means necessary. In some cases, the idea, in every case, the means for the plot, that is the bomb or what the suspect believes is the bomb, and all of the transportation needed to pull off, you know, what they believe is an attack. And if you look at the prosecution since 9/11 and the decade after 9/11, we can point to a handful of real dangerous terrorists, but more than anything, what we have are these men on the fringes of society who espouse violence, have no means of committing that violence on their own, and the FBI, through these sting operations, makes that violence possible.
Trevor Aronson, Andy Roth here. So glad to have you on the show. I think of this story that you've brought forward as a quintessential Project Censored story. It's incredibly important. It's very well documented. And as you point out in the book, most Americans have no idea. Tell us some about the kind of the process, if you will, that someone who gets caught up in one of these sting operations would go through.
Of course. You know, usually the men targeting these sting operations are targeted as a result of, you know, they're exercising their First Amendment. So they either, you know, might post on Facebook or on a forum that they have extremist views or want to commit some sort of act of terrorism, or they express it to an informant. And the FBI then assigns either an informant posing as an Al-Qaeda operative or an undercover agent posing as an Al-Qaeda operative to become the target's best friend. They talk about, you know, how awful America is and how they should do something about it. And, you know, over the course of weeks, sometimes months, in other cases years, the informant or undercover agent coaxes the target along and says, you know, if you want to commit an act of terrorism, I can provide that for you. And they in these cases, you know, provide everything that they need. You know, in several of these cases, the targets themselves didn't even have an idea for the attack. They just had a vague idea that they wanted to get involved in terrorism, and it was the FBI that came up with the idea. You know, a good example of that was a case in Dallas involving a man who just had a vague idea that he wanted to travel to Pakistan and Afghanistan and fight with the Taliban. And through the sting operation, an FBI undercover informant, you know, came up with an idea to bomb a downtown skyscraper. The FBI then gave him what he believed was the bomb, gave him the van that he would need to deliver the bomb, and then gave him the cell phone he needed, or he believed if he dialed would detonate the bomb. And when he did dial that cell phone, the FBI rushes in and arrests him. You know, I think the takeaway I would like people to have with my article and my book is that, you know, every time the FBI and the Department of Justice now announce a terrorism case, you should really look very skeptically at these cases and question, you know, was the defendant connected to any sort of international terrorist group? In these sting cases, generally they are not. And did the defendant have any capacity for terrorism? Could he have acquired a bomb? Could he have even acquired simple weapons that he could have used for a terrorist attack? And in most of these sting cases, that's not the case.
And in many of these cases, then, isn't it true also that judges are looking skeptically at the evidence, that many of these cases end up being thrown out of court for lack of compelling evidence? Is that correct?
You know, we just had a case recently in Miami where that occurred, where the federal government alleged that two local religious leaders were sending money overseas to fund terrorists, and there was really no evidence to support it, and a judge threw that out. But in the terrorism sting cases, what we see more often are guilty pleas, in part because the mandatory minimum sentences that accompany terrorism charges are just so draconian that it often is in the best interest of defendants, especially when, you know, they're working with public defenders, to plead guilty to get lower sentences. Because what happens in these cases is, you know, the FBI includes weapons that even a sophisticated criminal organization couldn't obtain, like a Stinger missile, for example. And because a Stinger missile was involved in the plot, that qualifies the defendant for 25, in some cases, 35-year minimum sentences. And in that sense, there's a strong argument to be made that, you know, there's a certain amount of sentencing entrapment going on, where since the FBI controls every aspect of the plot, they're intentionally including weapons and details about the plot that will qualify these defendants for, you know, very, very stiff sentences. And as a result, we're seeing about 80% of defendants plead guilty in order to get sentences of about 10 to 12 years instead of facing 25 to 35.
And are most of the people targeted in these FBI sting operations, are they Muslim mostly, exclusively?
Almost exclusively. I mean, we do see some of these sting operations used on, you know, perceived left-wing activists, environmental activists, so-called anarchists. But the vast majority of these cases involve Muslims living in the United States. That said, the Muslims who are targeted, you know, aren't likely to be, you know, the Muslims that you'd find at a mosque on Friday night and that are big parts of their communities. Instead, they're men who are on the fringes of those communities. You know, usually they're disaffected for whatever reason. They, in many cases, are mentally ill and are not really well integrated into the local Muslim community, although they are Muslims themselves. They also tend to be very recent converts in many of these cases. And what we see often is that they have a very crude understanding of Islam, and the informant or undercover agent is able to use that to the benefit of the sting operation by telling the people that, you know, this type of activity is condoned in the Quran, that, you know, this is, it's very kind of religious and Islamic for you to move forward in killing innocent people. And because they have such a crude understanding of the religion, they tend to agree with that, and that's used as a certain amount of leverage to push them forward in the plot.
We're talking with Trevor Aronson, who has a new book out called The Terror Factory. Trevor, you write about the FBI's vast army of spies located literally in every community in the United States, and we recently did a show about FBI penetration in the Occupy movement, which pretty much determined that Occupy meetings didn't happen without an informant being there. Are we really in danger from lone wolves, or is this more of an opportunistic taking of someone who's naive and perhaps vulnerable, and then choosing that to justify this expanded budgets of a police state?
I think it's definitely more of the latter, but, you know, the argument I make in the book is that this is very much a bureaucratic evil. You know, and by that I mean the FBI gets $3 billion every year to fund its counterterrorism program. It's more money than it receives for organized crime and financial fraud and the areas of typical investigation by the FBI pre-9/11. And so the FBI can't take $3 million, spend it, and come back to Congress and the public and say, hey, we looked around, spent your money, and didn't find any terrorists. Instead, you know, FBI sting operations provide a very convenient mechanism for the government to be able to say, hey, look at us, we're keeping you safe, another plot foiled. You know, what the FBI would say is that these sting operations are intended to find the people who would commit violence. But if you look very closely at the cases, which I did as part of this book, it's clear from the evidence that the men caught in these sting operations never could have committed the crimes were it not for the FBI providing the means and the opportunity. And at the same time, when you look at the real terrorists we've seen since 9/11, so for example, Najib al-Azazi, he delivered the bomb to Times Square that fortunately didn't go off, that was Faisal Shahzad, and then Najib al-Azazi tried to deliver bombs to Times, to the New York City subway system. In both of those cases, neither man was identified in a sting operation. You know, the people identified in sting operations are really these kind of loud mouths who, for whatever reason, hate the United States, want to commit an act of violence, but never have the means or opportunity. And so by trolling Muslim communities and finding these men on the fringes, the FBI has essentially creating, you know, the very enemy we fear. But at the same time, if the FBI conducted these types of operations in any community in the United States, I have no doubt that they would find the same kind of types of men on the fringes, either economically desperate or mentally ill, who are willing to get involved in a plot to commit some sort of act of terrorism or act of violence that by themselves they have no means of doing.
Trevor, featured you in the Censor 2013 book with this story. Are you seeing coverage of this issue in the corporate media in the U.S. at all?
Yeah, you know, I hope that I can take some credit for this. I think, you know, one of the things that's happened as well is that a lot of these trials, or not a lot, but a number of these trials have, these cases have gone to trial, which has exposed the larger news media to some of the more unseemly issues with these cases. And I think you're seeing a slow shift and gradual criticism of the cases. So, you know, for example, there's a man named Kwasi Nafis who was caught in a sting operation late last year, involving a plot to bomb the Federal Reserve Building in New York. He had no means on his own. The FBI provided everything, the transportation, the bomb, just like we see in these other cases. And in the fifth paragraph of the New York Times' story of that arrest, they had a pretty meaty description of the criticism of these cases. And that wasn't something we saw in the past. You know, at the same time, you know, Foreign Policy magazine, not exactly a bastion of liberal journalism, had a blog item not so long ago that said, how many, you know, idiot jihadis can the FBI fool? And so I think you're beginning to see a greater awareness of, you know, these types of cases within the mainstream media, and now kind of a greater pushback on these types of cases.
Trevor, thank you so very much for coming on the air with us today. We look forward to hearing more about how this story develops. We really appreciate your involvement.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks. It's pitch time, and we're still in Fun Drive here at KPFA. And we're really pleased to be able to offer this book, The Terror Factory, Inside the FBI's Manufactured War on Terrorism, for a $90 pledge. This is an amazing research book. It's something to really understand what's going on in America today, the police state, and the degree to which we're, all of our communities, our churches, our community organizations are penetrated by the FBI, by the police state, with informants everywhere, and looking for those of us, our neighbors and friends, who might be vulnerable, to encourage them to engage in some sort of illegal activities. So this is an important thing. You can call right now, 510-848-5732, or 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-HKPFA, or do that online. We would really like you to call right now. We have a number of good premiums today. Certainly this book, The Terror Factory, Inside the FBI's Manufactured War on Terrorism, for a $90 pledge. We only have 10 of those books at that level. So this is a hardback, very expensive book already. But we also are going to be playing today Robert Reich's new CD, Is Walmart Good for America? That'll be available for a $60 pledge. We will have his book, Beyond Outrage, for a $60 pledge. And we'll be interviewing Gary Wells later today on his new book, Why Priest, which is available for a $75 pledge. But we ask you to call right now, 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. We're in the last few days of the fund drive, and we need your help to push this forward.
So that's 1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732, and online at www.kpfa.org. This is really a win-win situation here for you. You can get Trevor Aronson's book, The Terror Factory, for a pledge of $90. In the book, so much more than we could cover in the interview this morning. In the book, Aronson traces, in some sense, the history of these FBI terror sting operations back to FBI rivalry with the DEA. So this is the kind of in-depth, thoroughly researched investigative reporting that KPFA supports, that Project Censored is all about. You can get that in this book, The Terror Factory, Trevor Aronson, for $90. And at the same time, you're supporting KPFA, Free Speech Radio. We bring this kind of news to the air. We bring this kind of news to the community. You aren't hearing this on the corporate media. Right. This is precisely why Trevor Aronson's report on FBI informants and sting operations was a number 4 story in this year's censored book. So KPFA provides a crucial broadcast platform for this kind of information, but we can't do it without your support. 1-800-439-5732.
Tens of thousands of you are listening right now. You're hearing this information, this news that you don't hear on corporate media. We've got 2 lights on, meaning there's 6 or 7 more people in that phone room right now that could take your call. There were the 3rd week of the pledge drive. We want to try to wrap this pledge drive up over the next few days. We really need your help to kind of push us beyond, what we need for a total goal of $750,000 to keep this station running. It's an important piece of communications in Northern California and to the world. So please give us a call right now at 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. We need your help. Please give us a call.
Our phone booth volunteers are standing by. They're ready. They're well-fueled. They can't wait to hear from you. And we can't wait to bring you more important news. But before we can do that, we really need to get the phone board lit up a little more than it is right now. We've got a few people on the line. We'd like to see a doubling of that, a tripling of that. So please, don't delay. Call right now. 1-800-439-5732. Support KPFA, your local community free speech radio. We're here as volunteers because we believe in the mission of the the station.
We want to see a couple more lights come on before we move into the Robert Reich talk. This is a brand new CD that was on his talk last Monday night in Santa Rosa. The title was Why Walmart? What's going on with the economy for the 99%? He's featured here talking about the differences between work in America between 1950s and today, who the biggest employers are, what the salary levels are. This is important information. Let's try to get a couple more lights on before we move to this tape. Please call 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. You can get this CD for a $60 pledge. And we're going to move right now into hearing Robert Reich's talk, a portion of that from last Monday night.
In the 1950s, I grew up in the 1950s, some of you did. In the 1950s, the largest American company, in terms of money and in terms of employees, and that's really what I want to focus on, is employees. Largest American company, in terms of employment, was General Motors. And General Motors in the 1950s was paying its workers, the average General Motors worker, if you adjust for inflation, that is in today's dollars, now it wasn't in those, but adjusted in terms of buying power, today's dollars, then the average General Motors employee was earning $50 an hour, including benefits. $50 an hour. Now, fast forward to today. The largest employer in the United States is Walmart. And the typical Walmart employee is earning not $50 an hour, not $25 an hour. Not 20, not $15 an hour. If you include part-timers, and you've got to include part-timers because part of Walmart's strategy, as is the strategy of many companies, is to keep people part-time so they don't have to pay a lot of benefits. Well, the typical Walmart employee, including part-timers, is earning $8.81 an hour. The story that goes from GM in the 1950s to Walmart today is a story about what's happened to the typical working American. And it's a story that has got to be changed. It's got to be reversed. What happened? And why did it happen? Well, part of that story has to do with the fact that in the mid-1950s, over a third of working people in the United States in the private sector belonged to a union. And that gave them bargaining power. That meant that they could get a piece of the benefits, a portion of the benefits of the profits, a portion of the huge productivity output that those big corporations were capable of generating. It also meant that the gap between the highest paid executives and the typical worker wasn't all that great. In fact, in those years, from the end of World War II up until the late 70s, early 1980s, the people at the very top 1%, were only taking home, now it seems like a lot, but they were taking home about 9 to 9.5% of total income. Now today, people in the top 1% are taking home more than 20%, more than 20%. Of total income. Executives are getting paid today about 300 times the typical worker. You've got the Walton family, Walmart heirs. I don't blame them. This is not a matter of criticizing. I just want to explain what's happened and where we are. They have more wealth than the bottom 42% of Americans put together. The 400 richest Americans have more wealth than the bottom 150 million put together. Something is not right with this picture. And it's not about villains. It's about the rules of the game getting skewed against average working people. Today, instead of a third of American workers belonging to a trade union and therefore having bargaining leverage to get a decent share of the benefits that come out of that corporation in terms of profits, today, in the private sector, fewer than 6.3%. Fewer than 6.3% in the private sector of workers are unionized. What else do we know about? Well, we know that in the 1950s, and there were a lot of things wrong with the 1950s. I don't mean to be romantic about it. I mean, women were, many of them were second-class citizens, and a lot of blacks were not fully given opportunities. That was before the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. But we did in this country, we did set our objective toward widening opportunity in this country. So I'm not romanticizing the 1950s. But it's also the case that under Dwight Eisenhower, who nobody would accuse of being a socialist, except perhaps Bill O'Reilly. And you know, I was watching the O'Reilly, I don't recommend you do this, I was watching the O'Reilly factor some months ago, and I swear, I thought I was hearing things. He said, you know that Robert Reich? I mean, he used my name. He, Bill O'Reilly, used my name. He said, Robert Reich is a communist. Can I just say, I am not now, nor have I ever been, a member of the Communist Party. But put that aside, Dwight Eisenhower was not a communist, and he was not a socialist, but the top tax rate under Dwight Eisenhower on the richest Americans was 91%. Now, even after all of the tax deductions, and even off all the tax credits, the top tax rate was still 54%. I mean, we're not talking about anything close to that now. We have just had a huge fight over whether the richest Americans, the top 2%, ought to be paying a rate back to what they were paying under Bill Clinton, which, as I recall, was not such a terrible economy. We also in those years, in the 1950s and 60s and early 1970s, made substantial investments in public education, in higher education, in K-12 education. We also made substantial investments in infrastructure. Remember the National Highway Building Program? I mean, we'd all justified it under national defense. We called it the National Defense Education Act and the National Defense Highway Act. But these were major investments in the productivity of all of us. And that combination of trade unions and public investment and high marginal taxes on the very wealthy, even under a Republican administration, guaranteed that the rising tide would lift us all.
You're listening to the new CD, Is Walmart Good for America? Economics for the 99%, by Robert Reich, who spoke last Monday night in Santa Rosa to an audience of over 450 people. Many in that group were asking, how can we get this CD? How can we have this speech? This is vital information for the American people. We can get it right now and support KPFA at the same time by calling 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732 for a $60 pledge. You can get that full speech from Robert Reich from last Monday night. You can also get his book, Beyond Outrage, which is what has gone wrong with the economy and how to fix it, for a $60 pledge. Robert Reich, those two combinations, you can get the CD and the book for a $100 pledge. That's all here at KPFA, supporting this radio station, keeping us going, keeping this kind of information flowing to the public. Give us a call right now, 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732.
You just heard Robert Reich talking about America of the 1950s and that being a period of a widening opportunity, a national commitment to widening opportunity. Well, at KPFA, been widening opportunity on the airwaves since 1949. It's a proud tradition. It's a tradition we need to work hard to maintain, and that involves you, as our listeners, as our supporters, calling in and making pledges to keep the station going economically. So a widening of opportunities. Help us do that. 1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732, online at www.kpfa.org. We have a KPFA t-shirt for a pledge at the $60 level. You can call in and make a pledge at any level and support the station. We've got KPFA bumper stickers to share with you. We've got, as Peter's mentioned, the complete speech by Robert Reich. Is Walmart Good for America on CD? We've got his book, Beyond Outrage. And these are excellent premiums. We need you to call in right now. We've got a couple calls on the line, but we have more people here, more volunteers here standing by and waiting to receive your call. So don't hesitate right now. 800-439-5732. Peter.
This is, you know, the winter fund drive for KPFA. This kind of keeps us going for the next several months. It's very important. A lot of the station is run by volunteers. Andy and I got up this morning at 5 a.m., drove down from Sonoma County. Here we are running the show today, and we love doing it. We want to keep that going, but you have to have staff here, equipment. 59,000 watts is not cheap. So, you know, that's why we ask you to help. We really petition you to make that call, to really think about it. Tens of thousands of you listening right now. Let's get 8 or 10 of you on the line. Please call 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. Some really great premiums today. Here's Robert Reich. Is Walmart Good for America, the CD, for a $60 pledge? Also his book, Beyond Outrage, What Has Gone Wrong with the Economy and How to Fix It. So you can get both of those for a $100 pledge. We have the book, The Terror Factory, by Harrison, which about the FBI infiltrating America, for a $90 pledge. And we're going to have the book we'll be interviewing next, Gary Wells, his book, Why Priests, which is very timely information given that the Pope has just resigned this week. This book, Why Priests, will be available for a $75 pledge. So please give us a call today. Particularly, Robert Reich's information is vital for every working American to have that, to know that, to be aware of that, to play that speech for your neighbors, for your friends, to read that book, be able to talk about it in your community, in your neighborhood. Call 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732.
Call us now, 1-800-439-5732. We're just about to go to a segment, interview segment with Gary Wills, Why Priests, a Failed Tradition. But before we do that, we need a couple more people to light up the board. Please call 1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732. Online, www.kpfa.org.
Up next, we're going to interview Gary Wells. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning American author with a specialty in the Roman Catholic Church. Okay, our guest today is Gary Wells. He's an author and a professor emeritus of history from Northwestern University. He has a new book out called Why Priests, A Failed Tradition. This is one of his many books, What Jesus Meant, Papal Sin, and Why I'm a Catholic. This book, Why Priests, is now number 18 on the New York Times bestseller list. Gary, welcome.
Well, thank you.
It's good to have you here. Tell us about this book. I've read it. I got a good idea of what's happening here, but you're saying why priests, and what do you mean by a failed tradition?
Well, I mean that the priests have caused more diversion from the gospel than the ministers that would have existed without them. You know, Paul, when he was writing to the various communities, said, you're full of the Spirit in these places, and the Spirit gives many gifts, and you have many ministries. There are teachers and preachers and prophets and exorcists and speakers in tongue and interpreters of tongue. No priests, because there were no priests. There were no priests at all in the early Jesus movement. They weren't yet Christians. And that came in only later and was very divisive for a lot of reasons. For one thing, that spread of ministries, including women prophets. He said, women, when you prophesy in church, wear a veil. Prophets didn't mean predictors of the future. To Jews, it meant the Jewish prophets who said, you've departed from the covenant. You're not keeping the contract with God. Well, that's what the women prophets were saying in the early communities. So there were no priests that came in for a very odd reason. But what set me on this was the fact that the holiness around priests that made us think no other ministries were needed or really could be needed. He was the priest was the monopolizer of the sacred. If he didn't show up, you didn't have a mass, you didn't have anything that really mattered. What made me start thinking about that is that the whole mystique of the priesthood revolves around the fact that the priest alone of people could change bread and wine into the real body and blood of Jesus. Well, I've spent the last three decades studying and writing about, commenting on St. Augustine. And Augustine said, there is no real presence in the bread and the wine. He said, it can't be the body of Christ because you are the body of Christ, namely his people who chose him as a bishop. That's the only way you could become bishop then. It was popular choice. And when he gave out communion, he would say, receive what you are, the body of Christ. And that's what the Corpus Christi was, the church, in the early days. And he said the thought that the bread is the body of Christ, he says, makes no sense. You don't chew Jesus. You don't digest Jesus. And when Jesus was at the Last Supper, he held out the bread and said, this is my body. But it was his body that was handing it out. They knew where his body was. And when he didn't want them to eat his body, they would have to eat his hand or his arm. It was a symbol of union. You see me with my body. When you eat this, we are joined together as brothers, almost as if we were all one body. So it was only later on that the idea of the exchange at the communal meal, which is what happened in the early church, made a kind of objectification of the elements of this exchange, the bread and the wine. And these were taken out of the meal context. They were put in a monstrance. They were taken around in procession. They were exposed to benediction, and people would come in and adore the bread that they think is God. You know, they never thought that when Jesus was handing it to them at the Last Supper, because they knew where he was. So in the Middle Ages, when there was this kind of superstitious objectification of a lot of things, the sacred blood and other elements, all of the relics of Jesus, which were fake, all the splinters from the true cross, etc., there was this intense worship of the elements of the exchange at the meal in their own right. And this went along with a whole series of developments that were taking the church farther and farther from the gospel. For instance, in the Middle Ages, the pope became a monarch, a king. Understandably, I suppose, because all authority was monarchic and feudal then, gradated. You went through knights to barons to the emperor. But when that happened, you know, the pope became the ruler of countries that had armies, that had spies, that had prisons, that had all of that. And this was taken to be sacred and somehow connected with the preaching of Jesus. It's very hard to justify that. In the 19th century, finally, those earthly trappings were torn away from a terribly resisting pope. Pope Pius IX said, you can't take those away. They're sacred. They're mine. They're Jesus. But they did. And in order to compensate for this loss of earthly power, he had the First Vatican Council, which he had called and controlled, declare him infallible. For the first time, there's a formal declaration that the pope is infallible. So he said, you may have taken away all my possessions, and he made himself a prisoner in the Vatican. He would not go out on the balcony and bless the world anymore, because the world had stolen his kingdom. But he said, now I can rule over the realm of morals, faith and morals. Actually, that was a teaching that was opposed by John Henry Newman and Lord Acton and others in England, and it was so outrageous that it's not been used really since. There's been only one infallible pronouncement since. It's on the Assumption of Mary into Heaven. And it doesn't even say whether she was assumed when she was after death or before death, so she didn't have to die. But it says Mary went to heaven, which is not too surprising, because Jesus said to the thief on the cross beside him, "This day you will be with me in heaven." So if the thief went there, I suppose she did. But anyway, this was done so that you would have at least one infallible pronouncement that nobody could really argue with or cared to argue with. And then, since then, there's no formal invocation of infallibility, but there's an air of almost infallibility. The Pope is not speaking infallibly, but he's speaking eternal truths, kind of pseudo-infallible.
We're talking with Gary Wills. He's the author of Why Priests, A Failed Tradition, a longtime scholar. You were in a seminary for several years.
Five.
And you were Jesuit trained, and then you went on to teach at Northwestern and have published a number of books. You certainly, from how you're talking, you know this history quite well. So you're saying that transubstantiation, the transformation of the bread and wine into the body and blood of Jesus Christ, didn't really exist historically until what time?
Well, from the time of about the 5th century after Augustine, it began to develop. And, you know, there was a kind of literal reading, a fundamentalism of the Bible, which we get in many Christian things. Well, if he said it's his body, it must be his body. And there were long debates about what that meant. Did the bread disappear, or is he kind of mystically present in the bread? Or some people said, if a dog eats the bread, does it eat the body of Christ? And they said, no, it's an interpersonal exchange. So if you don't believe in Jesus, you're not going to receive it. So if the dog eats it, it's just bread. If I eat it, it's Jesus to me. Others said that it was Jesus in symbol, in figura, as they put it. Others said there were two substances in there, and Luther played with this idea that there's really bread there, but there's also Jesus. Consubstantiality, they said. But then you come to the 13th century, and the scholastics were in love with Aristotle. He had just been rediscovered in the West. And they said, well, Aristotle solves our problem, this debate that's been going on for centuries, because he said you can distinguish substance from accident. The dog is the substance. The dog can be large or small, white or black, Pekin geese or Great Dane. Those are all accidental. He still remains a dog no matter what. So they said, Thomas Aquinas leading among them, that then the substance of the Eucharistic elements, as he called them, would be Jesus. And the fact that it tasted like bread, smelled like bread, felt like bread, would be just accidents, not attached to any substance of a dog, bread, rather. But, of course, that's a misreading of Aristotle. He said you could distinguish the two, but he didn't say you could ever separate them. You can't have a dog that's of no size, no color, no accidents. And you can't have accidents floating around looking for a substance to attach themselves to. So it was a very odd argument. Sad that it was accepted as the formal teaching of the church for a long, long time. Now, more and more Catholics are thinking, as many Protestants always have, that it's not literally the physical body. It's a symbol of our union with Jesus.
We've been listening to an interview today on Why Priests, from Gary Wills, and this is an amazing piece of information, history, documentation of the Catholic Church, and how literally for 500 years, priests, in terms of how we think of them today, really didn't exist. That the body of Christ meant the corpus of Christ, the people in the church. What interesting concepts, and we went on to talk with Gary Wills about how that superseded, and the church today and the people in a community of a church really could and really can be the formation of a social movement and a power base of transformation because of the spiritual nature of who we are and what people are doing. That book, Wild Priests, A Failed Tradition by Gary Wells, is available for a $75 pledge here at KPFA. You could pick up that book right now. It's certainly a wonderful read. I spent a good many hours with it. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-HEY-KPFA, or online. Why Priests, A Failed Tradition by Gary Wells for a $75 pledge. Think about what you've heard just in this hour here at KPFA. We've covered Robert Reich's speech, Is Walmart Good for America?, and his new book, Beyond Outrage, What's Gone Wrong with the Economy. We've also had Why Priests, A Failed Tradition, and we started out with terrorism and the FBI, and what's going on, the terror factory. Those are all, you know, imagine all of those shows here in less than 1 hour, that information available on KPFA. That's who we are. That is what KPFA is all about. And we need your support to continue in that tradition of allowing you to know what's really going on in the world, what the powerful are doing, what's being hidden from us, what's important information for all of us to know. Please call 510-848-5732. All our lines are open right now. We've got one person on the line. There's two. Please keep calling in. 1-800-439-5732. Or the end of the program. This is your time for, you know, the next seven minutes to make those calls to support KPFA. We only do this for a couple, 3 weeks, and then you go back to regular programming. You have this opportunity to get this information. Is Walmart good for America? Wild Priests, the Terror Factory, all available for pledges of $100 or less in support of KPFA.
Trevor Aronson on FBI terror entrapment, Robert Reich on the economy, Gary Wills on the Catholic priesthood. This is the kind of great programming that KPFA provides all day, every day. You heard Gary Wills, in effect, saying history matters, learning matters. Well, KPFA is the kind of place. KPFA is your place on the airwaves where you learn about the history, where you learn about what matters in society. We need you to call in right now, 1-800-439-5732. We bring this kind of great programming every week on the Project Censored Show, every Monday through Friday on the Morning Mix, all day long on the airwaves, but we can't do it without your support. So we need you to step up right now, start lighting up the phone board, be like Camille of Fresno, who made a call and made a pledge today. Claire of Atherton, thank you so much for your support. We truly appreciate it. It's deeply meaningful to us. Lauren of Mill Valley, also calling in, getting one of those great premiums that we've got. The Aronson book on the FBI, Gary Wills on Why Priests, Robert Reich, Beyond Outrage. And Mike of Oakland, also calling in, putting his financial support behind our station, behind your station.
Gary Wells talks about the psychological burden of being a priest. And he spent 5 years in a Jesuit seminary. He's gone on to be a scholar, historian about the Catholic Church. He studied extensively St. Augustine, Thomas Aquinas. I mean, this tradition of the Catholic Church inside Western, history in Europe. Is a vital part of the history of the world. I mean, it's one of the largest religions in the world. It's not the largest, but certainly one of the largest. And it carries with it the burden of probably what we call a totalitarian system. Because when you start putting people in charge and saying that they have these extra powers of transubstantiation and that they can, it places a burden on them and a burden on the and it diminishes the members of the congregation. So what he's saying is that was not what the history of the Catholic Church was about. So he's saying that there was the mystic body of Christ was all the members of the church, all people in the world, literally, who were can engage in for spiritual endorsement and support of each other. So that book is certainly a philosophical understanding of how Catholic Church has changed and how it can continue to change, and it impacts all of us in some very important ways. So Why Priests, A Failed Tradition by Gary Wells. He He's not saying priests are bad. In fact, he says many of his, you know, Barry finds a lot of priests who are really supportive of this kind of activity and this kind of understanding. And we have Robert Reich's understanding about what's going on in the world today. Why is Walmart, is Walmart good for America? Well, he's saying that for every job Walmart creates in a community, 1.4 jobs go, disappear. So that there's an economic loss in any given community. So this is the information you can pick up by calling 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. Supporting KPFA is a vital part of intellectualism in the world today. It's a vital part of you knowing what's really going on in society, what the powerful are doing, what we can say, and what kinds of actions we can take in response to that. You can support this radio station, 59,000 watts of power reaching to Fresno, Santa Cruz, Ukiah. You know, there's 450 people up in Sonoma County came out to hear Robert Reich Monday night. I know a lot of you want that CD. So please give us a call. It's a $60 pledge to KPFA. If you haven't yet called in, even if you have already called in to KPFA, do it again. We need your support. You know, the lines right now, there's only a couple people on the line. Here we are, the last 5 minutes of our show. We need to light up that board. We're making headway. We want to get back to regular programming. We have these great premiums for you to call today, 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. You can do it online at kpfa.org. 1-800-HEY-KPFA.
It's so easy to take for granted if you're a regular listener of KPFA that you're getting high-quality news and programming every day, all day long. But really, you have to think about what the corporate alternative is. We would be talking about celebrity gossip. We'd be feeding you the junk food news and the news abuse that we document in the Project Censored book every year. But no, what you're getting here is deep analysis, highly documented, well-researched analysis of things like the FBI terror entrapment program, Robert Reich on the underlying dynamics of the economy, a historical perspective on that that helps us understand that the way it is now is not the way it's always been, that it can be different, that it perhaps ought to be different. Gary Wills giving us historical analyses of changing meaning of the priesthood in the Catholic Church. This is the kind of deep sociological analysis that news should incorporate, that news should be about, and it's here on KPFA for you. So 1-800-439-5732. We can't say it enough. 510-848-5732. We're seeing the board get a little bit more active, and we like that. We want it to be even more active. This time a week ago, the board was lit up. We were running out of lines for people to call in. We want to do that again right now in these final few minutes.
There's this little box over there that we can see through the studio window here, and it has these red lights on it. And sometimes none of those lights are on, and right now it looks like four or five of them are on, meaning that there's four or five more people waiting for you to call right now. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. And we have all those volunteers in there. We've had some great support. Today, up to all our donors, Semi-Freddy's, High Wire Coffee Roasters, Traditional Medicinal Tea, Cabot Creamy Cooperative, Bee Honey, Bee Healthy Honey, Bobby G's Pizzeria. Those are the ones that provide the free food that comes in here for those that are the donors that, for calling in, answer the phone. We still have some lines open. Please give us a call. We've only got 2 minutes left on this show.
We've got just a few copies of The Terror Factory by Trevor Aronson left, 1-800-439-5732. We want you to step up and be like Mike of Oakland, who called earlier this morning and made a pledge. Join Lauren, join Claire, join Camille in supporting KPFA Free Speech Radio. Call us now, 1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732. Please.
You may never have been a member of KPFA, and you can join for only a $25 pledge. You can even put that a credit card or spread it out over a couple of months to pay it. I mean, we're talking coffee money here in terms of supporting KPFA. You get that KPFA bumper sticker, be a voting member for a $25 pledge. But if you're able to, you know, bring up that credit card and make a $5 pledge a month for the next year, you can pick up that Is Walmart Good for America, that CD, or the book Beyond Rage by Robert Reich, or for, you know, the $6 a month, you can pick up White Priest, The Failed Tradition, or the Terror Factory book. for like a $8 a month contribution. So these are available to everyone. These are important literature in America today, and a public speech by Robert Reich. Please give us a call. It's 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. I want to make one quick announcement. Mickey Huff wasn't with us today, and that's because he's up in Mendocino, up there on the North Coast. So if you're hearing that, you're up there that way, the Mendocino Whale Festival is going on, and Mickey is going to be speaking at Twist, which is 45140 Main Street in Mendocino, Saturday night, from 5 to 7 p.m. He'll be talking about the Project Censored book and what he does, the work he does here at KPFA. We want to thank Kristen Thomas and Anthony Fest for their help with our show today. It looks like our lights are almost we're almost full. We've got opening for five more calls. Please keep calling in. You're tuned in to KPFA 94.1, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 in KFCF in Fresno, and online at KPFA. Up next, we're going to have Democracy Now.